This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Caroline and Ezra here with you on the evening edition. Now, if corporations conduct their businesses in a suitable manner, they can be a driving force for better education, equality, and prosperity in developing nations. On the other hand, if they do this poorly, they may instead be the cause of discrimination and the exploitation of vulnerable groups. So, hence the need and importance for human rights auditing of companies and corporations. Here to tell us more about it, we have Mr. Marzuki Darusman, Director of the Human Rights Research Center for ASEAN, as well as Mr. James Coleman, President, Director of Mazars in Indonesia. Gentlemen, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having us.
All right. So let's just to get us started, tell us what you're doing in town, because you're not based here, right?
Okay. My name is James Coleman, and I'm presently in town for the Forbes CEO conference. Mm-hmm. In Forbes, and I think this is one of the major themes of what we'll be talking about in this 1 hour. In Forbes has always historically been interested in a company's performance, and that performance is measured by financial results. And that's how we always judge businesses and companies and the rest. That's how we've been educated. However, the companies that make the most money in the world are not necessarily the best companies in the world to invest in. So Forbes recognizes that and looks at issues of sustainability and some of the things that we'll be talking about today.
All right. And Dr. Marzuki, Paul Marzuki, can you tell us a bit more about your role here?
In collaboration with Mazars, the Human Rights Resource Center in Jakarta, we're doing joint research with the company, and this is all intended to produce a baseline study on business and human rights. So I'm on my way to Bangkok, actually, so it all fit in with the Forbes conference. So I'm happy to be here.
And do you find that there are other organizations similar to yours that will be attending this conference to discuss these issues as well?
Well, I think everybody is looking at performance. And, you know, again, performance has been measured for all of these many, many, many years. Performance has been measured in a certain way. But the world has changed, you know, and brand values and how companies can demonstrate themselves has changed. I think that in the developing countries, to answer your question more specifically, I don't think that anybody, maybe other than Mazars, is looking at this. In the more developed markets of America and Europe, probably the big four are very involved in this. But these are smaller markets and maybe don't represent as much money to them. To us, they're important issues, not only for the society reasons and all the reasons that you mentioned at the outset, but also because it's good business.
Pak Marzuki, has it always was it a matter of time that these issues came to the fore in terms of its significance and importance in Asia?
Yes, absolutely. I think there's a bit of history behind all this. We've dealt with human rights in connection with the state, the government. We've been dealing with human rights on the individual level. The next big thing is corporations. And that's where we are at the moment.
And, I guess easier said than done with regards to sort of evaluating the human rights performances with regards to corporations. What are some of the obstacles that come into play when we're dealing with that issue?
These are very, very sensitive subjects, and people are not used to it yet. It's very normal to have your auditor, like Mazar, come in and do a financial audit. Everybody's ready. Here's my financial statements.
Here are the numbers.
Here's the numbers. Please audit them, right. You know, and they're prepared for that. When you come in and you start asking them questions about their workplace, when you start asking them questions about their non-discrimination policies, when you ask them questions about health and safety, when you ask them questions about their supply chain and how they choose their supply chain, who they are in business with, and we can give you some spectacular examples of some failures with regard to that. when you start asking those kind of questions, they're just not prepared for it yet.
Even MNCs, you find that with all their dealings, isn't there a certain level of preparedness? Wouldn't that be part of their, I guess, their social corporate responsibility?
Otherwise, you know, one would be under the impression that they wouldn't be confident enough to invite you in to do that to begin with.
You know something? I would bet you that even if we came over here to BFM and asked you to go through a human rights audit, you may say, wait a minute, you know, let's take a look at our hiring policies. Let's see how many, you know, it just so happens we have one male announcer and one female announcer, but our discrimination policies are, you know, there's very few companies in the world, whether they're an MNC or a non-MNC. You guys may know Walmart, one of the biggest corporations in the world, certainly in the top 10, maybe in the world. They are presently being sued in the United States. I guess the lawsuit may not go through because of a Supreme Court ruling, but they are being sued, or were being sued, by 1 million female employees.
A million female employees?
1 million female employees who say that they have been discriminated against in their employment. If you look, there is no question about it that there are more males in high management. Probably in BFM, there may be more males in high management. I don't know. Hmm. All over the world, that may be the case. And these women in Walmart have said, hey, wait a minute. We can prove, or they believe, that they can prove that they have been held back, that they are not paid at an equivalent level and the rest. It's not easy for a company to subject itself to this. That's Mazars' job, is to help them to understand and to take them through that process.
All right. And you're going to take us through that process right here on the Evening Edition. Okay. We'll be right back. We've got Prince lined up in the meantime. Stay with us. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, the business station. Caroline and Ezra here with you on the Evening Edition, talking about human rights auditing.
And, of course, with us we have James Kalman, President Director of Mazars in Indonesia, and Pak Marzuki Darusman, Director of the Human Rights Research Center for ASEAN. Pak Marzuki, can you tell us a bit more about your work and your observations with HWRCA in terms of, I guess, the progress in which this matter with regards to human rights and auditing is concerned?
If I can just put it in context, we are all aware that last year the ASEAN set up this new commission, which is the ASEAN Intergovernmental Commission on Human Rights, and many of us thought that after 25 years of activism in the region, it was time to take stock of things and plus perhaps try to do something to contribute to the workings of the EICHR. It's known as EICHR because of the novelty, perhaps of I wouldn't say novelty, but the need to familiarize much more amongst ASEAN on human rights issues, which of course generally is considered as a very sensitive, if you will, subject. But then
apart from it being sensitive, it's I guess the recognition of it is not as where it should be.
That's right, absolutely. So although we've actually implemented human rights unawares, actually, and that is that if a government is responsive to the needs of its citizens, then it is on its way to a policy of human rights. But then, as we become more open societies, individuals have more access to information from all over the world, then people start making comparisons as to perhaps what may be the better way of organizing a society and all that. Now, be it as it may, the need for research has come to the fore because we may have to look into ways of implementing human rights that provides or caters and responds to the needs of society. And this may be more in the social and economic areas, which I think may need a bit more thinking compared to the past, where NGOs and perhaps also government have been more fixated or focused on political rights. And we now we are now going into the phase where all these rights may have to be taken into account equally. So the Human Rights Resource Center is aimed at creating or coming up with baseline studies. We've done a baseline study on the rule of law practices across ASEAN. We are now in the midst of undertaking a baseline study on ASEAN women's and child's rights. And on the side, as I mentioned earlier, we are in collaboration also with Mazars and a number of universities across ASEAN to look into the issue of business and human rights.
A huge undertaking with regards to all the studies, not just for any of these countries in ASEAN.
Right.
But, and James, obviously, you do certainly value the work that is happening with Pak Marzuki and HRRCA. How has that contributed to your work?
You know, we would have never... We're great auditors, and we are great at reporting, and we saw where the markets are going, where stakeholders need information more than what they used to get in the past. I mean, you know, you see every day corporate failures around the world, and they were companies that made good money. They did very, very well. They had beautiful audit reports, and a year later they were gone, you know, or 2 years later they were gone. And so what a lot of people are looking at and what we're very involved in is integrated reporting, and sustainability is the key, okay? Sustainability, as the United Nations defines it, is human rights. It's the global compact. It's human rights, labor rights, environmental rights, and anti-corruption. It's all human rights. You know, we could be on your radio show and we could be very, very polite and talk about social compliance and this kind of thing and not use the human rights term. We love to be in your face and call it what it is. It's all human rights. If we talk about labor, if we talk about the environment, if we talk about anti-corruption, you give a bribe, people don't get hospitals built, they don't get clinics built, they don't get schools built, because the bribe went to one person instead of the community. It's all about human rights. Mazar is very interested in the auditing and reporting side. However, without Pak Marzuki Darusman and without the ASEAN Human Rights Center, we frankly would have credibility as auditors, but we wouldn't have credibility as human rights experts. So if I may, let me just take 1 minute to say what hasn't been said. Pak Marzuki was the founder of the Indonesian Commission on Human Rights. He was the Attorney General. He was part of a three-member UN commission that investigated Benazir Bhutto's assassination and issued one of the very bold reports that was issued over this last year. He was the chairman of a three-member UN commission that investigated war crimes in Sri Lanka, and that was issued just a few months ago, another very bold report. And he is currently the rapporteur for human rights in North Korea. That gives Mazar the credibility to work together on this subject.
Well, I think when you've done reports regarding Benazir Bhutto in North Korea, I think the credibility issues should be pushed aside then.
Absolutely. All right. So we'll have more for you in a little bit. We're discussing human rights auditing this evening. In the meantime, we've got the BFM News updates coming up. Stay with us. BFM 89.9. Good evening, I'm Caroline Oh.
And I'm Ezra Zayn.
That's right, we're talking about human rights auditing this evening with none other than Mr. Marzuki Darusman, Director of the Human Rights Research Center for ASEAN, as well as James Coleman, President and Director of Mazars over in Indonesia. Now, during the break, we were having this conversation. We were talking about how people focus on countries versus focus on companies. Why don't you explain
that? With regard to their human rights track record.
Yeah, if I may, you know, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was issued in 1948. So let's close our eyes for a moment, and let's look back at the world in 1948.
Right after the war?
Right after the war.
Right.
The world was very different. So in Asia, it was decimated. I think that Japan, the occupation of many countries and the rest, it was decimated. I don't know if you know, but the largest economy in Asia at that time was the Philippines. Very, very different from today.
Right.
Europe, 70% of the industrial production of Europe was wiped out by World War II. Again, close our eyes, that's the world we were living in 1948. 1952, Charlie Smith, the CEO of General Motors, famously said, "What's good for General Motors is good for America." Wow. All of a sudden, something's changing there. What does that mean to you? Corporations are taking the lead. Companies or countries are out there to facilitate, create the environment and the rest for corporations to do what they do best, which is go out and conquer new markets. Mm-hmm. And that was the new battlegrounds. Today, let's fast forward to the year 2000. More than 50% of the top world economies are corporations. Put a different way, the 200 largest corporations of the world are bigger than all of the countries of the world other than the G10. Corporations dominate. Shell, their sales are bigger than Malaysia, for instance. Or PetroChina might be bigger than Malaysia, or Hong Kong Bank would be bigger than Malaysia. Companies matter. How can we not incorporate them into the world's infrastructure and how we deal with employee matters, environmental matters, supply chain matters, workplace safety, all of these things that affect every single one of us on this planet?
Have there not been some sort of checks and balances in place previously? Were there not practices and acts that would sort of circumvent or at least sort of keep an eye on these companies?
You know, each country has its own human rights commission, okay? I think maybe it would be best for Pat Marzucchi to explain to us how those human rights commissions have acted, because maybe they haven't had the teeth that they could have or the enforcement mechanisms that they could have.
Pat Marzucchi.
Well, yes, that's a relevant point, James, because I think it's a common experience of human rights commissions across the region. And I might refer to the Malaysian Commission also, and the Philippines and the Thai, for example. In the case of Indonesia, what came out in terms of statistics was that the highest incidence of human rights violations occurred with in cases where corporations were involved. Land evictions for malls, land eviction for highways, you know? And so that gives you a sense of the scale of the problem involving the relation between corporations and the public and the government. And it has only been recently, perhaps going back just 10 years ago, maybe even less, that the United Nations has now become aware of this particular dimension. And that's why in 2005 the Secretary General then appointed an academic from England, Professor John Ruggie, who I'll explain later, came up with a series of reports, the final one which was then passed in Geneva in June this year. And we now have a guideline for business and human rights, and that is now the premier norms that are subscribed by corporations, and therefore this whole issue of business and human rights is in fact grounded on solid ground in terms of norms.
This took place this year.
This took place this year in June in Geneva. And it's a guideline that comes out from a series of reports that were discussed and consensus was reached with the corporations, and it's a guideline that goes out from three pillars: the protection obligation from the government, the obligation to respect human rights on the part of corporations, and remedial measures for individuals victims of human rights violations by corporations.
All right. So that was June this year. So out of all the major corporations in the region, based on your expertise, of course, how many have proper human rights and business practices, would you say?
Well, this is a new area, actually. I would say we go back to a bit of history here. Cooperation started with public relations, actually, you know. And this was the beginnings of a realization that somehow the relations between corporations and the public need to be shaped in a way that made the corporations look good in terms of their business practices to the public. Then came the phase of from PR to CSR. And that's where corporations had realized that they had to do more than just polish up their image. They had to, in fact, compensate for any kind of damage that may have incurred in their operations.
In your view, was that transition or that compliance more of a branding initiative, or was it, do you feel, that something that corporations felt pressured to sort of come up with?
It's a bit of both, but I would say that it starts out from a motivation that corporations feel need to feel that they're doing good. But at the end of the day, of course, you will understand that they're doing this in terms of their business interest. Now, the final phase that we're going into now, in fact, is from CSR to human rights audit. And this is where I think the future lies in terms of how corporations will be able to align themselves to these human rights norms.
James, I would imagine that corporations obviously look at their bottom line, their numbers, and that being the case, with this awareness increasing as we go along, why wouldn't they want to conduct themselves in a sustainable manner that is in line with human rights? I mean, albeit that they would have it would take quite a bit of an initiative on their part, but if this is going where the direction is, what's preventing them? What is the trepidation behind that?
Well, you know, we're under such pressure. The business community is under such pressure to deliver quarterly results, to deliver weekly and monthly and yearly results. And how do you do that? You cut costs, and corporations are faced with this constant pressure to cut costs. I think where Mazar sees the markets going and where we see things going is exactly how the UN defines it, sustainability. Isn't that a wonderful word, sustainable? If a company is sustainable, that means it's here today, it's here tomorrow. And so it's not just about your quarterly profits and the rest. Then you can start to look at making smart investments, doing things the right way, the sustainable way, for a long term. But if you're just concentrated on short-term profits, you know, why not use the human trafficked people, which is a big subject. I see in Malaysia yesterday in yesterday's paper, big subject. Why not use those people at lower cost, that you bring them in from Burma and hold their passports and make them work as many hours of the day as you can? Companies are under a lot of pressure to make the right ethical decisions, and this may be this way of looking at them will give them the opportunity to think longer term.
Very quickly, before we go to the break, it seems to be a similar conundrum with companies feeling the need to go eco-friendly and going towards a green, and feeling the pressure between delivering quarterly results and being compliant as well.
Yep. So we'll break this down further for you in a little bit. Just stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, the business station. Caroline and Ezra here with you on the evening edition. Human rights auditing is what we're discussing this evening with Marzuki Darusman, director of the Human Rights Research Center for ASEAN, as well as James Coleman, president director of Mazars over in Indonesia. So we were saying during the very, very short break that we had that human rights is possibly the way, the horse you want to back if you want to be ahead of the curve.
Yeah, these are new protocols that the United Nations has just established. This is a very subtle thing. We always had countries and we always had individuals. If we listen to what Pat Marzuki said before, now we have the obligation of companies to respect. How do you show that respect? Is you have an audit. Now I can tell you, don't get behind the curve. These are new regulations. These are new protocols from the United Nations. If you're behind the curve in this instantaneous world that we live in, this Facebook world that we live in, if you get behind the curve, it's going to cost a fortune to get back into the curve. Your business can be destroyed in minutes, in hours in the world that we live in. So okay. It's important to stay out in front.
So let's break it down a little bit and talk about implementation then. How is it exactly put into practice? I mean, we were saying a little earlier that companies find it hard to get behind this. And like you said, it's a very personal topic. So maybe Pak Manzuki, you'd like to address this one. How would a big corporation put this into practice? What would be involved?
Well, yes, the whole idea goes out from this nexus between business and human rights in a way that reflects the public awareness at the moment. And this is also on the part of companies that are conscious of the fact that we now have a public out there that has strong convictions of what is right and what is wrong in terms of corporate behavior. And therefore, although this, of course, goes without saying, but corporations have need a bit of lead time to familiarize themselves with this new nexus between the business and human rights in a way that goes beyond CSR. Because now we have international norms which then serve as the guidelines for the actual audit process that could take place or should take place. Because going back to Professor Ruggie's recommendation, he clearly spelled out that the role of corporations would be to respect human rights, and he links it directly with the notion of due diligence, which is to be interpreted, of course, as an auditing process. And that's where this whole collaboration between the Human Rights Resource Center and Mazars has its justification.
Right. So you say international norm. I'm just wondering, though, is it fair to compare one country with another? I mean, is it a level playing field?
Well, the nature of human rights is such that it's universally applicable, even when a certain country may not quite have the laws in place. For example, some countries have a policy of free education, for example, but free education is not quite spelled out in international human rights. The right to education, yes, but not free education as such. And therefore, some countries even go beyond the Universal Human Rights Declaration. So it varies, and an auditing process will have to also take into account the existing laws of that particular country.
Going on sort of that tangent of the realities of the work that you both are involved in, I'm not sure if the analogy is appropriate or accurate, but similarly, when you're doing accounts with numbers, there's a bit of creative accounting that is done before it's submitted to the auditors. Are there ways in which corporations can are looking for loopholes or get around, to protect, I guess, their lack of performance in regards to human rights?
Well, maybe I can put it in a different way than the way you just described it. The accounting laws are so complex that there are different ways that you can present information. Mm. And both could be right, but they could be drastically different in terms of what your report looks like, okay? And that's why just a financial statement alone, you've made my case for me, in fact, just a financial statement alone does not tell all of the information about your company, because there are these loopholes right. that you refer to. Now, let's go to a human rights audit. What we would do is exactly what you referred to with a financial audit. A company says to us, here's my financial statements, please audit it and attest to whether you believe this is correct or not correct. Please give us an opinion. Similarly, with a human rights audit, a company would give us a statement saying, this is us. This is what we do in our company. These are our policies with regard to non-discrimination. These are our policies with regard to human rights. These are our policies with regard to how we select our supply chain. These are our policies. And they would set that forth. And they would say, we are in compliance with the Malaysian laws, or we are in compliance with the United Nations protocol. In our auditing process, we have looked at every UN convention every international labor organization convention and about 80 other conventions. So we have brought it to that level. You can then tailor it to each country level. And so companies would turn around and say, I am doing this, I am doing that. And it would be the auditor's responsibility to come in and give an opinion on that statement, just like their financial statements, to give an opinion whether that is a fair and accurate statement that they have produced. And that's what the audit process involves.
All right. Are there certain areas within the whole human rights issues that stand out particularly where, I suppose, countries in the region are not doing particularly well?
Any specific areas more so than others?
Environmental, you know how a company deals with the environment around its workplace or its mine. You know, here in Malaysia, you have a lot of natural resource businesses and the rest. How companies deal with the communities around them, the environment around them. I think we've all been challenged on that, whether it's in Indonesia or in the United States. You know, it's not a pretty sight to go to a mine site after it's been mined. It's an ugly sight, and the toxic chemicals and the rest that can get into the water and to the food. Those are human rights issues, okay? And that's exactly the types of issues that companies are accountable for.
Oh, I mean, that's sort of the vivid imagery that I guess we're talking about. I think when we think about issues of human rights, especially with regards to companies and corporations, I mean, I guess for in terms of the layman's point of view, you think of, for example, I think there were cases with regards to Nike and the manufacturing of their clothing line and clothing apparel taking place in Indonesia and parts of Pakistan and how child labor was involved, similar to other corporations like Apple and the manufacturing of their products as well in China. Are there, I guess, case studies of recent times that sort of you can share in terms of, I guess, the severity of how it is?
Well, since you're a business station, I think we just have to be forthright about this. Going on from the Indonesian perspective, for example, James mentions a few articles in the Malaysian newspapers regarding illegal trafficking of people for the workforce here in Malaysia. Now, these things don't stand alone, because we know for a fact that labor in Malaysia has been also supplied by Indonesian companies.
Right.
And these are supply companies that may have to look into their operations, whether or not they were involved in these trafficking. So this is an instance where a real problem felt by the Malaysian public and the Indonesian public brings out to the fore the need for corporations to have themselves audited that would then assure to the public that perhaaps if there are excesses here and there, it's not a policy of the company, but it's more an oversight. So that's one example. The supply of labor and its relations with the issue of trafficking.
Are the respective countries and governments, how are they complicit with the extent of the legislation that is currently in play?
Well, I mean, again, taking this as an example, it has to do with ASEAN, for in this case, of signing the migrant convention, for example, and some of the ASEAN countries have not done so, and therefore it makes it very difficult to oversee and organize labor supply across the region in a way that complies with human rights.
James, we were just mentioning, we have to wrap up, unfortunately, but we were just mentioning even in regards to the refugee situation between Malaysia and Australia and how that deal, the supposed proposed deal, has been put off due to the High Court ruling in Australia. And I guess it goes back to sort of whether Malaysia was a signatory to the UN Human Rights Convention in regards to refugees.
You know, I mean, every country and every company is coming under such pressure by an activist NGO community, an activist consumer, an activist investor community, that that there's so much pressure that's being put on this if you're not out in front and if you're not a signatory to these things. I saw in yesterday's paper about sexual harassment that Malaysia also doesn't have anything in its penal code relating to sexual harassment. That's something that if it's not dealt with, I mean, companies have to deal with it. I can tell you that Nike or any of these big international companies, they would be dead without that. If I can, you asked for an illustration of companies. Can I do something very quickly?
Very quickly. We have to wrap up soon.
In Indonesia, we have a case with Citibank.
Right.
Citibank's debt collectors were collecting a debt. I think this happens often with debt collectors in my home country, America. It happens all over the world. The debt collectors, the debtor died. And the accusation is that the debt collectors kind of precipitated that death. But this is an issue for banks. If anybody of your listeners have ever had a simple credit card loan come past due and they start getting faxes to their office and phone calls and to their house and to their wife and everything else, it's a trauma. And companies need to act at a higher standard, even if there's no refugee law, sexual harassment law, whatever it is, whatever that topic may be. Companies will be finished because it'll be all over Facebook and your radio station and every place else.
All right. How long do you think it'll take to get where, well, you were hoping it will get to?
Well, we're already in the process of doing human rights audits. I think we're one of the first companies probably in the world to do that. There are some big companies in the developed countries that are doing these things. It's something that's taking off. Isn't it wonderful, though? Here's the wonderful thing. Isn't it wonderful? Pat Marzuki and I were just in London. We made a presentation to the top 100 companies in the UK. We were standing across from the Tower of London where kings beheaded people and the rest. Few miles away from Westminster, the seat of democracy, and here we were from Indonesia lecturing on human rights. And isn't that wonderful that here we are in the studio in Malaysia talking about human rights, taking a lead worldwide on
these subjects. A wonderful juxtaposition.
To answer your question, Caroline.
Yes.
The EICHER has one of its priorities, business and human rights, of all things. You know, it's amazing, but I suppose ASEAN works in a mysterious way sometimes.
It does indeed. All right, gentlemen. On that note, I wish we had more time, but we have to wrap it up. Mr. Marzuki, Darussman, James Coleman, thank you very much for joining us here this evening.
Thank you.
Absolute pleasure having you on the show. We've got Life's a Pitch coming your way. Football right after the news. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.